May it please the court?
Certainly.
This case began in 2011, filed by my clients, certain landowners in Miller County, Missouri, filed against the city of Eldon. The case survived a motion to dismiss, and then after discovery, defendants, respondents in this case, filed a nominal motion for summary judgment. I attempted to respond to that motion, but as I did so, the words came back to me from the attorney that I wrote my very first motion for summary judgment for. He looked at it and said, "This is not a motion for summary judgment," which, while that stung, it taught me. So, as I read through their motion, I was reminded of the rule. 7404 requires that a motion for summary judgment state with particularity in separately numbered paragraphs each material fact as to which Movant claims there is no genuine issue, and make specific references to the pleadings, discovery, exhibits, or affidavits that demonstrate the lack of a genuine issue. And per Marciotto v. Christian Hospital, that is not discretionary. It is mandatory. There were 19 numbered paragraphs that were set forth as statements of fact in respondent's motion. And as I read them, I realized that few of them could actually be considered factual statements rather than legal conclusions. And then as I studied the citations to evidence, I realized that very little of the evidence was admissible as it was presented. The defects in the motion are set forth exhaustively in appellant's brief, but essentially the evidence was hearsay, or the affidavits presented were faulty. There were sometimes general references made to huge documents, nothing pinpointed in those documents.
But why couldn't you just take paragraph by paragraph and say that?
I tried. And as I attempted to, I realized all that I was doing essentially was writing a motion to strike.
But isn't that normally done by filing responses, suggestions in opposition, or that says why this is, you can't admit or deny this because it's conclusionary, and so forth and so on? I mean, yeah, that's why the case law is so sparse about dealing with motions to strike in the summary judgment context, because normally you set those forth in your response to the motion.
It would be a very lengthy response.
Is that what you ultimately did do, though?
Ultimately, in the motion to strike, and then in the brief afterwards, in the motion to strike, I went through and tried to respond, mm-hmm. And I couldn't. I couldn't use their evidence. I couldn't even find some of their evidence. Some of their statements didn't have any citations. Some of the citations were to statutes. Anyway, in my search, I did find some references to a motion to strike that was used in certain circumstances. So that's what I did.
There's nothing in the rule for summary judgment that permits or authorizes a motion to strike, is there?
Not directly, not clearly, but it has definitely been used in particular court cases. And as I see it, when I looked at the rule for the motion to strike, 5527, it said it can be filed within 30 days after a pleading. Well, is a motion for summary judgment a pleading? Some cases say yes. Moxness v. Hart, 2004, they cite Rule 1.03G that states, under the rules, a pleading means any complaint, answer, reply, application, protest, petition for review, or motion. And even a case introduced by respondents in their substitute brief, New Prime, Inc. versus Professional Logistics Management, refers to motions for summary judgment as pleadings. Now, it may be used loosely, but...
Does part of what you're arguing now go to your second argument as well, that even if a motion to strike is not the appropriate response, there's enough confusion in the rule and the cases to constitute good cause for thinking it was, and so the court erred and abused its discretion in not letting you file it afterwards?
Exactly right, because it it's known that it, a grant of a motion for summary judgment has to be carefully considered because it could deny the parties their day in court, the plaintiffs their day in court, and that's exactly what happened here. They didn't get to go to the court on the merits of the case. As it is, the ruling by the circuit court essentially granted their motion for summary judgment on evidence that was inadmissible, as it was. True, they may have been able to correct some of those defects in the motion, but they weren't required to. They didn't. The circuit court looked at it and said, no, she didn't respond in accordance with Rule 7404. Therefore, the statements are deemed true and the motion for summary judgment is granted in defendant's favor, defendant city respondent's favor. So that was that. So we appealed it to the Western District, and they cited to decisions like Schloss v. Gerstner, where the parties may bring defects in the affidavits attached to the motion for summary judgment or other supporting materials to the trial court's attention by motion to strike or objection. It was also noted in Bakewell versus Missouri State Employees Retirement System that neither party moved to strike or otherwise object to the defective affidavits. And in Rossi v. the City of Marshall, it was mentioned that the defendant city filed an amended motion for summary judgment in response to plaintiff's motion to strike the original motion. And it's said repeatedly in both appellants and respondents' brief that, well, it's cited to Marciotta that I quoted before, that the rules outlined by the principles and guidelines under Rule 7404 are not discretionary, but mandatory and must be followed. The circuit court seemed to skip the fact that the city's motion for summary judgment did not follow itself the rules of 7404. Skipped over that and focused on the response, not following the proper course for a response under 7404. So now this court has the opportunity to clarify whether a motion to strike is indeed a proper response for a defective motion for summary judgment, as the Western District decided, or in the alternative, I suppose, to give guidance to litigants who are met with a very defective motion for summary judgment. I think that's all I have to say.
No other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Certainly. Before you get started, give me the where in the legal file your summary judgment is, if you would please. Because I've got a three-page summary judgment motion and I've got a memorandum. That's fine. You can do that on rebuttal just to direct me to the right place. Thank you. Oh, pardon me, that you don't have rebuttal. Thanks.
Right. I will find that for you, Judge.
Can That's you speak fine. Up Go a
right
little?
Ahead.
I will find that for you, Judge. You know, our position throughout, since the trial court ruled in our favor, even before that, is that a motion to strike is simply not a proper response to a motion for summary judgment. 55.27 is fairly general and broad, whereas 74.04 is very specific as to the procedure that must be followed with respect to a motion for summary judgment. And as 74.04 goes on to say, if you don't file a response or if it's not a proper response, then the facts of the movement can be taken as true or are admitted as true. And that's what happened in this case. Judge James looked at this, decided it was not a proper response, you know, took our facts as true and ruled that way. At the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals seemed to base their opinion on Sloss versus Gerstner. And based on what we could tell from their opinion, in essence, announced that a motion to strike is, in fact, a proper response to a motion for summary judgment. But if you go read Sloss, Sloss actually does say, as the appellant pointed out, that, you know, the requirements aren't mandatory and you do need to file a response as set out in the rule. Sloss also goes on to state that, and there was a motion to strike filed in that case, but if my recollection is correct, the motion to strike went to affidavits that had been filed. And I believe that was also the case in Bakewell. In one other case, which I believe is the Rask case, one of the parties filed a motion to strike, and their opponent filed an amended motion in response to that, with, as best we could tell from the Court of Appeals opinion, nothing being taken up before the court that even took up the motion to strike. They just filed a response, and then a 90-page response was filed, and, you know, in return to that, the court ruled on the case, and the motion to strike itself was never taken up. So, you know, the appellant makes much of the fact that they believe that our motion for summary judgment was conclusory and the evidence was either inadmissible or hearsay. But if you look at 7404, it says that you shall summarily state. And as I noted at the Court of Appeals, you know, I don't believe it means that you have to have your motion for summary judgment parsed by EBY.
Well, you have to state facts, not opinions or conclusions, and they have to support grant of summary judgment, and they have to be supported by evidence in the record or affidavit.
As set out in the rule, Your Honor. That's correct. And
right.
We believe we did that. And going back and looking at our motion for summary judgment, you know, try to make a point not to make it conclusory and explain, you know, put it why you believe there's no genuine issue of material fact, and then explain why you believe that, and then a cite to the record. And as far as we can tell, we complied with the motion. But in terms of what the trial court did in ruling in our favor, there really wasn't anything else for the trial court to rule on because the motion to strike is not a proper response.
Well, there was the motion they requested to for leave to file their response out of time, because there are these references in the cases to motions to strike, and there is a rule that says you can file a motion to strike within 30 days. I understand your argument that that's not that the summary judgment rule supplants that, you believe, but why isn't that good cause? It's not that they waited or rested on their laurels within the time period they did file that motion. Why wasn't it an abuse of discretion to deny their motion to
late because file? Based on a reading of Rule 7404, it doesn't allow a motion to strike to be filed.
And so if you could address my question, but isn't some ambiguity raised by the fact that other rules say you can file a response to the motion to strike within 30 days, and some cases discussing summary judgments refer to motions to strike? Why isn't that, even if you're right about how you should respond, good cause for not doing so initially and giving permission to do so later?
Well, in this particular case, the motion for extension of time was filed after the response was due, after
right.
18 days after the date the response was due. Under the Scottsdale case and under Rule 44.01B, if you file a motion for extension of time after the time has passed for your response, you have to file a motion and a notice. In this case, a motion was filed, no notice was given. There was a notice, there was another pleading filed on July 28th, which was the following Monday, but that pleading was filed after the court had already rendered judgment. There was a notice for hearing filed on July the 30th. But that actually went to the motion for extension of time, but subsequently a motion to vacate was filed. And a hearing was held on the motion to vacate based on, actually, as best we can tell from the docket sheet in our memories, based on the notice for the motion for extension of time. But at that hearing, the motion for notice of extension of time was not really argued. It was the motion to vacate. So to wrap that up and hopefully answer your question, the rule was not followed. 44.01B was not followed with respect to the motion for extension of time and the notice being filed. So
and what about the motion for vacate? What's the standard for granting or denying that?
I would have to research that. I do not know off the top of my head, Judge. But I do know it was taken up. We did respond to it. It was taken up by the court and denied. And then later there was an amended judgment filed which denied all the outstanding motions.
Counsel, even if the motion to strike had been in form and substance of response under 7404, was it timely?
Was it timely?
Yes.
Yes, sir, it was timely. It was timely. That was actually the judge asked for an affidavit in this case as to when it was received. And because of the holiday period, there's a holiday period in the interim, it was timely. And that was never an issue we had. We, you know, we agreed it was a timely filing. So, and, you know, to allow other motions to be filed would essentially abrogate the rule. There isn't any case law that we could find that said that a standalone motion to strike is a proper response to a motion for summary judgment, even though that's essentially what the Court of Appeals seemed to be saying. But if that was, if any motion in 55-27 or other motions could be allowed with respect to a motion for summary judgment, then it would just kind of turn into a blizzard of papers, I believe the Court of the Inman case pointed out. So, you know, to allow this would essentially, or what the Court of Appeals seemed to do is abrogate the rule and say a motion to strike is fine, any other motion is fine. Now, a motion to strike, I do believe you could file a motion to strike with a motion for summary judgment, and the Sloss case says that in essence, and so does the Bakewell case. But in each of those cases, a proper response to a motion for summary judgment was first filed, and the motions to strike were filed along with them with respect to what were alleged defects in the affidavits. So,
do you believe that your motion for summary judgment complied with the rule?
I do, Your Honor. I do. And
is the ruling of the Court of Appeals seem to indicate it did not?
Well, the ruling of the Court of Appeals, they actually didn't take that up. I mean, they had the opportunity, I believe, to do a de novo review of our motion for summary judgment and rule on that as well, but they didn't, seemingly because they felt like the motion to strike was proper.
They didn't take up the merits of the motion.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. Because I believe they felt that the motion for extension of time, you know, should have been granted, and the court should have done that. So it would go back down and then hopefully come back up and give them, you know, two sides to look at. But yes, we did believe it was proper, and that we supported, you know, what we properly supported. Everything we had in our statement of uncontroverted facts and followed the rule properly. And I did, the motion to vacate standard, Judge, is good cause to vacate, reopen, correct, amend, or modify a judgment.
And are there cases addressing whether ambiguity in the rules or dicta in the cases about motions to strike would constitute good cause or what does constitute good cause? Her opposing counsel says, assuming you're right about filing responses, she was misled by the references in the rule to 30 days to file a motion to strike pleadings and by references to motions to strike on appeal, even if, and those were good cause, basically.
I think an argument can certainly be made that you could be misled by 55-27, but I think a look at the case law surrounding 7404 and the actual language of 7404 itself, it makes it very specific as to what you're supposed to do. 55-27, the opening paragraph is, it just says you need to respond. It doesn't really say when. Well, it does say when in 405, but it's kind of loose as opposed to the language of 7404 that is really tightly written. It says you shall do this, you shall do that. And I also think that in 55-27, if this court had wanted that to include a motion for summary judgment, that language would have appeared, you know, in 7404 or somewhere that said you can also file anything in 55-27. Or whatever else you can come up with in response to a motion for summary judgment. And if 55-27 does go to 7404, then it now takes somewhere around 75 days to file your motion, file your response, if there's a surreply, and then getting it noticed up. and finding a law day in smaller counties, there might be a law day, you know, once a month or something like that. So now you're out to about 100 days.
Well, now you're addressing whether it's a good idea, and I appreciate, but that's a little bit different issue.
It is a little bit different issue, but in a way, if it was allowed, it just kind of seems to open the gates for a blizzard of paper. You know, we do believe we adhere to it. We don't think it was an abuse of discretion for the trial court to follow the rule and take the facts, our facts admitted as true, because there wasn't a proper response out there. You know, and as the Inman case said, a reasonable person should differ as to the propriety of a trial court's actions, then there's no abuse of discretion, and we don't feel like that there was. I mean, there was a motion for extension of time filed, but it wasn't properly filed, wasn't noticed up per the rule. So there just didn't seem to be anything there they could do. No other questions? We would ask the court to.
I found it, page 109. Is that where you found it?
Page 81 is where the motion is.
Right, but you've got a separate document that are your uncontroverted facts.
That's correct.
Yes, we do have the motion. The uncontroverted facts and the brief.
I found it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
I have little to add, but this quote from the Western District's opinion states well that the objections that were made by appellants concerning their motion for summary judgment and the defects in it, says, were appropriate objections to be made to a trial court by way of a motion to strike in response to a motion for summary judgment. Only after the trial court's ruling can a party be expected to respond substantively to whichever paragraphs of alleged undisputed material facts the trial court has determined comply with the mandatory requirements of Rule 7404.
Would your argument apply to a motion for more definite statement? It's right above the motion to strike in the rule.
I don't know how to answer that.
I noted that the Court of Appeals doesn't cite any authority for that statement that you're relying on.
No, they don't. Yep. But they...
Can you speak up a little?
They were very clear that they considered Sloss v. Gerstner, their own statement from the Western District, that did indicate that a motion to strike was appropriate.
Okay. Any other questions? You have more time if you wish to. Anything further?
No.
Okay. Case will be submitted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.